I'm John Batchelor with Daisy Dunn, a classicist who's done us the great favor of putting together the classical world historically, chronologically. But the women are emphasized and there are parts in it, some spoken, most not. But certainly after reading Daisy's work, it's impossible to go back and just tell the story of Caesar. That is totally inadequate. Motivation, drama. Now we come to Augustus, formerly Octavian. Not a warrior-looking young man. However, a man who is Roman in the fashion that his wife has a child, and he announces her on the birthbed, "I divorce you." And he takes up with a married woman, well, the woman who was married. She might be widowed, I don't remember. Her name is Livia. And he takes up with her and stays with her the rest of his life. What do we need to know about Livia? Because Robert Graves turned her into a poisoner. No, I reject that. But what was she, Daisy?
Livia is incredibly interesting, another very clever, politically expedient woman. She was actually forced to divorce her husband and to hand over her children to the ex-husband in order to marry Augustus. And she was there while he was turning essentially the Roman Republic into an empire. He was the first person who is changing Roman politics, you know, for a very, very long time. He has some precedent. His great uncle, Julius Caesar, had really kind of rocked the boat. But he's got to build a dynasty now. And Livia is seen to be essential to building that dynasty. Unfortunately, Augustus and Livia don't manage to have children together. But she has two boys of her own, and one of those boys is Tiberius. And Tiberius, in time, will be adopted by Emperor Augustus and become the next figure in this dynasty. So Livia is key, really, to the establishment of the Roman Empire, the whole new system of rule. But she's also incredibly helpful to Augustus. She's almost his kind of right-hand woman, in a way. She plays a role in diplomacy. People from abroad actually prevail on her when they were facing the death sentence. She plays a role in politics as well as being there at Augustus's side.
One other woman around Octavian important is daughter Julia. The only one will be his successor. I mean, will survive of all the children he conceives. And he bullied her, made her do this and that. But eventually he said, "You've got to marry Marcus Agrippa." And that, my reading of that is that it was a happy marriage. She traveled with him. She had several children. My memory is five. Mm-hmm. He was the hero of Actium. He was the admiral to Octavian's imperator. But Julia didn't, after Marcus Agrippa died, things didn't work out for her. But her grandchildren, wasn't her grandchildren the people that were dying sort of mysteriously? Was Germanicus her grandchild? Was her child?
So it's a very complicated family tree. So after Agrippa dies, she is forced to marry her stepbrother Tiberius, and they absolutely can't stand each other. So they don't have a happy marriage. But she has, as you say, these five children by Agrippa, and one of them is Agrippina the Elder, who marries Germanicus, who becomes an enemy of Tiberius. So it's all quite messy and knotty and complicated.
Very complicated, but it's all one family, Julian and Claudia. Tolstoy, right? All happy families are the same, right?
But right.
Now, we'll get back on the line of Livia and Tiberius. I want to just pause here to say that the Julian Claudian family was rocked by the challenge of succession. It's hard to find, after Augustus, it's hard to find somebody who died in his sleep. Can you find one?
The majority of these emperors after Augustus, I have to say, do not have natural deaths. Most of them are suspected of being poisoned or killed.
It's all of a sudden it becomes, well, to read it from the outside, I have to read it in English. It becomes violence. You're emperor, but you know you're going to end violently. You mentioned Tiberius, who retreats to Capri, I believe. And Rome is turned over to the hands of the senators and a couple of rascals who work for Tiberius. And following Tiberius is Caligula, To say the Caligula has a relationship with women is far-fetched. What was he? What was he to the women? Did everybody run away from him?
I mean, he was a lech of the First Order, the way he's described. He's said to have committed incest with all three of his sisters. He had one particular favorite sister who he essentially made into a goddess after she died. Any man who came round for dinner with his wife could pretty much guarantee that during that dinner, Caligula would run off with the wife and then come back at some point during the meal, looking a bit disheveled with the poor woman as well. He is meant to have had just absolutely prolific tastes and have been, I mean, Caligula really is painted as a monster in the sources. It's difficult to deny that.
Yes. And where did he learn that? Was that, it couldn't have been his father. Who was his mother? I don't remember.
So his mother was Agrippina the Elder, who had a great sort of role in the German military. She was fantastic. I mean, I think as a woman, it's very difficult to say that he learned these his ways from him. People instead sometimes blame Tiberius because as a teenager, Caligula went off to live with Tiberius for a while. And it was in that period where Tiberius was said to have been very perverted. So people make that connection.
Yes, that's fair enough. And besides, Caligula would have always wondered whether he was going to be murdered next because all of his older brothers died mysteriously. Yeah. All right. Agrippina the Younger. Now, there is an act. Who was she?
Agrippina the Younger is best known to history for being the mother of Emperor Nero. And she was a lot more than that. She is, again, another kind of very feisty, very astute, very clever woman. And the fact is that Nero becomes emperor when he's only 16 years old. So at the very beginning of his rule, she is essentially co-emperor, you know, not in name, but in effect. And on the coins, she's shown side by side. Her face is there with her sons. And as time goes on and Nero gets a little bit older and more kind of rebellious in his teenage years, he wants absolutely nothing to do with her and really resents her having any control or power whatsoever.
At one point, one of his marriages, I believe, is Messalina. Is that correct? And Messalina, what a surprise. A daughter-in-law doesn't get along with her mother-in-law. But boy, this is a duo. What happens?
This is very difficult. So Messalina is actually not Nero's wife, but Emperor Claudius. Sorry, these family trees are very complicated. Yeah, so she becomes a third wife of Emperor Claudius. But as a duo, these two women are both written about as if they are the most notorious women in Rome in that period. So Agrippina, on the one hand, is this very pushy mother, very kind of politically engaged. She seems to be wanting power, according to some of the historians. Messalina, on the other hand, is this very beautiful woman who's being forced to marry the rather unattractive Emperor Claudius, who actually Agrippina then marries after her and becomes the fourth wife. It's very complicated. Anyway, Messalina is actually accused of being a prostitute on the side of being an empress and actually going out, putting on a blonde wig and working in the brothel because she was supposedly so sexually insatiable.
Yes, it gets very complicated because Claudius dies suddenly of what presumably is poison. There's even a poisoner named who becomes famous. It's at this point, the bodies are falling in all directions. I went too fast to Nero. Nero's the end. There is no Julian Claudian after Nero. So here we have our final moments with Daisy Dunn. Daisy, your conclusion is that we have to look at each epoch separately, and we can't run them all together, although the tendency is that. My reading for your very helpful book is that the Greeks were far more serious and much less bloody-minded than the Romans. How do you compare the two? We have 30 seconds.
I'd say the Romans are a lot more politically sort of savvy in the way they go about their sort of politics and familial sort of relations. I think in Greece, it's harder to get an idea because there are like 1,000 different city-states, so it's hard to generalize. But I think as a writer, Roman politics really is incredibly exciting to write about. And as a historian, it's what I love.
Yes, 2,000 years later, same place, different language. Daisy Dunn, The Missing Thread, A Women's History of the Ancient World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,